Hi, listeners, and welcome to the True Crime Weekly podcast, a podcast that is based in San Diego and hosted by me, Alina Trujillo, and my producer, Jose Fernandez. This is a podcast where I will be bringing you stories of murders, infamous cases, and unsolved mysteries. On this week's episode, I want to tell you about a case that happened in Modesto, California, that unfortunately didn't get the attention that may be needed due to other high-profile cases that were happening around the same time, like the Chandra Levy case, the killings that were going on in Yosemite, and of course, the infamous Lacey Peterson case. This week, I want to tell you about the disappearance of Dina Riley McCluskey. Okay, Jose, I just have to tell you, I don't know if you've seen this show. It's called Betrayed.
I think I have.
Okay. It is the best show out there. I love that show. Fun fact about me.
Okay.
We're going to kick it off with a fun fact.
All right, let's go.
I love watching that show because I can just like sit there and then I like to pretend like I'm trying to solve the case as it's going on. And because they give you like, they do the voice of the victim and then they do like the possible suspects that could have killed her from the very beginning.
Oh, yeah. So I like know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I like to just like sit there and be like, he did it. No, he did it. So anyways, the reason why I'm telling you this is because, so one, I'm pretty much going to retell you a story from that show, Betrayed.
I'm good with that.
So, fun fact. And another reason why I'm letting you know this is I've seen the show and I love that show. I don't know that I've ever felt the need to retell a story or look into a story that they tell. And this one got to me.
Really?
And it got to me just, you'll see at the end why. But I felt the need to, like, tell her story. Because, like, how I told you in the very beginning, like, unfortunately, her case didn't get as much media attention. I don't want to say that the cops didn't really pay attention to it, but they had a lot of high-profile cases, like I told you, the Lacey Peterson case, the Chandra Levy, the Yosemite killings that were going on, which I know Yosemite is just, Modesto is kind of like a stepping ground on your way to Yosemite. Mm-hmm. So I just felt like, oh my gosh, after I saw her story, I just needed to tell it.
Yeah.
So
it just didn't get enough, really, of a spotlight, it sounds like.
Right, which was very unfortunate. So let's just jump right in, okay?
All right.
So on October 10th, 1999, 36-year-old Dina Riley McCluskey disappeared without a trace from Modesto, California. Dina had lived her whole life in Modesto, California, and she was the oldest of three siblings. Dina's parents had divorced at a very young age, and Dina had dreams to become a lawyer. But right after she graduated high school, she ended up getting married and getting pregnant right away. So Dina ended up having a miscarriage, and unfortunately, her marriage wasn't able to overcome the miscarriage of the baby, and eventually Dina and her husband ended up divorcing. But right after her divorce and the miscarriage, Dina found out that she wasn't able to get pregnant, and that was something that Dina's family said that she really couldn't overcome. Like, it really affected her. And right after her divorce, Dina got married for a second time. But once again, that marriage was shortly lived. Dina ended up divorcing her second husband as well. And by the time Dina was 30 years old, she was now divorced twice. And now she was just looking to have fun. She no longer wanted to get married. She just wanted to have a happy life. Until one day, Dina was having a yard sale, and while she was selling her things, a man came up to her, and he introduced himself and asked her out to dinner. His name is Mark... Oh, how do you say that name?
Marco. It sounds like you're saying Marco.
Marco. Well, I don't understand what you're saying.
I'm just thinking his last name is just Co.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Mark Co. Mark Co. Damn it. Mark Marco. His name is Mark. So, fun fact, I cannot say last names. So, his name was Mark, K-E-O-U-G-H. Fun fact.
Marco. Mark. Co.
Mark. Co.
You're saying Marco.
Oh my God, so are you.
Marco Polo. Marco.
Okay. Soon after they met, Dina and Mark move in together, and Dina is in love once again. Mark didn't seem to care that Dina couldn't have kids. He just wanted to be with her. But soon after Dina moves in with Mark, she discovers that Mark has anger issues and is very explosive. And as the relationship progresses, so does the abuse.
No, that's terrible.
Yeah. So Mark starts to verbally abuse Dina. Then he would also threaten her that he was going to kill her. Then the verbal abuse turned into psychological abuse and then turned into physical abuse. And Dina's family said that as the physical abuse grew more and more, the less that they would see of Dina. So there were multiple domestic abuse reports that were filed with the police. And eventually, it was no longer just reports of Mark being violent with her, but there was also domestic violent reports where, like, Mark would call the cops and Dina because they were having an argument and she would get violent with him, or the neighbors would hear them argue and they would call the police.
Man, it just sounds toxic.
Yeah, yeah, very toxic. Eventually, Mark ended up getting arrested for domestic violence against Dina in December of 1998. But he ended up posting bail and was out. And while Mark was out on bail, he contacted Dina. And he apologized to her and told her how much he loved her. And Dina ended up forgiving him and taking Mark back.
That's not good.
Right. It was definitely one of those typical domestic violent cases, you know, that we see, unfortunately, very often where the husband or boyfriend hits the wife or girlfriend. They, like, arrive with flowers and try to sweep them off their feet, and they apologize. They said they were angry, they'll never do it again, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, usually they're very manipulative and they're usually very charming. So, you know, it's easy for the girl to say, oh, well, he didn't mean it, you know?
Yeah, then it just starts another cycle all over again. And then here we are, weeks, months, maybe even days later.
Right. And Mark was known to also be very charismatic, and that's how he was able to win Dina back time and time again.
Yeah.
So Dina and Mark ended up getting evicted from their apartment due to all the fighting. And eventually Dina would move back in with her mom, but that was shortly lived, as once again, Mark was able to charm his way right back into Dina's life, and Dina ended up moving in with Mark again. But at the time, Mark was living with a friend. And this friend's name is Russell Jones. Russell and Mark were very good friends, and they had been friends for a long time. And after Mark met Dina, Russell naturally also became friends with Dina.
Mm-hmm.
And even though this living arrangement wasn't the ideal situation for Dina, since, you know, they were having to live with Russell rather than just them two having their own place.
Yeah, it's like a third wheel now.
Yeah, and not only that, but Russell also had a girlfriend. She didn't live in the house, but she was often there because, yeah, you know, she's the girlfriend. So Dina, even though this wasn't ideal for her, she thought that maybe it was better that way because she knew that Russell would keep Mark calmer. So, like, Mark wouldn't really act up in front of Russell.
Yeah.
So she thought, like, you know, this is blanket. Right. So she thought maybe this is a good thing.
Yeah.
So after they move in with Russell, Dina's family start to see more and more of her, just like they did before. So all of a sudden, you know, everything's kind of starting to get back to normal.
Back to normal. Back mm-hmm. to a good place.
Right. So while all this is going on in Dina's life, the news was also covering the Yosemite murders going on during that time. And it seemed that there was a killer targeting women in Modesto, since, you know, how I mentioned earlier, Modesto was kind of like the gateway to Yosemite.
Right.
So with all these murders going on around Modesto, Dina no longer felt comfortable or safe, not even when she was with her boyfriend, Mark. And Dina ended up confiding in Russell how she didn't feel safe with a killer going around killing women around Modesto, And Russell was there to make her feel safe. And one night, when Dina was feeling a little vulnerable, she ended up having relations with Russell.
So why didn't she feel safe with Mark?
I think that because they were starting to argue again more and more. He wasn't physical yet, but
they're trying to get back into that
right toxic into that place. Yeah. So I think it was like I don't even feel comfortable with him or anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
So after Dina had relations with Russell, she did tell Russell how it was a mistake since she was with Mark. And, you know, obviously Russell also had a girlfriend. And she told him how they couldn't have relations again. So this was going to be a one-time thing, one-night stand, that's it. Are we cool? Cool. So after Dina and Russell have their one-night stand, the relationship between Dina and Mark start to get bad again. They once again start to argue a lot, and a lot of the arguments start to become more and more about Russell. And Dina starts to suspect that maybe Mark knows about their one-night stand that her and Russell had.
There's no way.
Right. Well, then in May of 1999, Mark came home showing off a gun he had just purchased. And right away, Russell did not like that at all. Because, you see, even though Russell seemed like the knight in shining armor, you see, Russell had served time in prison, and he was also on probation for a gun violation in Kansas. So now with Mark bringing the gun into Russell's home, it exposed Russell to going back to prison.
Yeah, and that's putting me at a risk if something were to happen.
Right, because, you know, obviously because he's on parole, his parole officer can search his house at any time for no reason. And if they found Mark's gun, it didn't even matter that it wouldn't have been Russell's, as he's not allowed to be around a gun as any parolee. So Russell ends up kicking out Mark due to the gun. But when he kicked out Mark from the house, Russell told Dina that she could stay and rent the master bedroom from his house by herself. With Mark being out of the picture and Dina living with Russell, this gave Dina's family a chance to spend more time with Dina once again. Since when she was with Mark, it seemed that Dina would distance herself from her family. But then in October of 1999, Dina decides to give Mark one last chance. And she goes away for the weekend with him to an area near Yosemite. But the getaway weekend doesn't go as planned. And they end up separating again.
Weird.
Right.
Would have thought.
So Dina was looking to get her life back on track. And this time she refused to take any phone calls from Mark. She didn't want to talk to Mark. And she didn't want to risk him charming his way right back in. So right. I think now she's aware, okay, he's charming. He's going to tell me all the right things, how much he loves me and how sorry he is. I'm going to feel bad and I'm going to take him once again, yeah, take him back once again. Right. So this time she realizes that. So she's like, I am taking any phone calls from him. I'm not talking to him. So on October 10th, 1999, Dina went out to the bar with Russell to hang out and have a good time. But that would be the last time that anyone would hear from Dina again.
Oh, no.
So the days after Dina went missing, Mark started calling Dina's family, asking them if they had heard from Dina because he hadn't been able to get a hold of her. So the family didn't find this alarming as they thought, well, Dina had gone into hiding before to get away from Mark. So they just figured, well, what the heck did you do to her now, Mark, you know?
Yeah.
So Mark ended up reporting Dina missing to the police. And this started to raise alarm bells since it had been known that Mark had gotten physical with Dina on several occasions. But then it raised even more alarms when Dina's family started to get worried about Dina when she stopped calling them and she stopped showing up for work. And her family knew that there were times that Dina would go into hiding from Mark, but she would always call them and she would still show up for work. So after Mark files the missing persons report, so does Dina's family. They also go to the police station and they file a missing persons report. Soon after the two missing persons reports are filed, on October 14th, 1999, Mark ends up finding Dina's car parked in front of an apartment complex a few blocks away from Mark's house.
That's weird.
Right. Like, all of a sudden, I report my ex-girlfriend missing, and then, oh, look at that. I stumbled upon her car, you know?
Yeah.
But that's weird. Mark, when Mark does find Dina's car, he does call the police and tells them, hey, I just found her car. This is the location of the car. Come get it, you know? And when the police get to the location, they find that there's a little bit of blood on the door handle of the car. And right away, Mark becomes the number one suspect. Police end up questioning Mark about Dina's disappearance. And he tells them that he wants to help find Dina. And that they should probably go talk to Dina's roommate, Russell. And as cops continue to question Mark, Mark eventually ends up telling them that if they're going to continue to ask him questions, they're going to have to go through his lawyer.
So lawyered up.
Yeah. So detectives find this odd because he's saying how much he wants to help find Dina, but then immediately he lawyers up. So detectives are like, what the heck? So detectives were able to confirm that the blood found on the door handle of Dina's car was in fact Dina's blood. But other than finding that small drop of blood, that's about it. They didn't find anything else.
Nothing?
Nothing. So detectives go and question Russell about Dina. And Russell tells detectives that he hadn't seen Dina in a couple of days, but he just assumed that she had gotten back together with Mark. So detectives ask Russell if he's willing to go down to the station and take a polygraph test. But Russell refuses to take a polygraph test, which...
I would do the same.
Exactly. I would do the same, too. I don't believe in them. You know, I feel like they can incriminate you even if the person is innocent. Yeah. And I feel like probably a real good manipulator can also manipulate the test and be off scot-free. And they're not even admissible in court, so...
Yeah, what's the point?
Don't
like,
do
what
it.
Is it? It just kind of can lead to a false direction, maybe, you know?
So. Yeah.
Yeah, stuff.
So, on October 17th, 1999, detectives were able to get a warrant to search Mark's house. And they do. But detectives weren't able to find any evidence connecting him to Dina's disappearance. And that became a dead end for detectives. Dina's case becomes colder and colder, little by little. And detectives didn't have any new leads to go on. And after they searched Mark's house and that didn't point them in any direction, it became harder and harder for them to solve the case. On top of the lack of evidence that detectives had for Dina's disappearance, they also had their hands full, like I said before, with the Yosemite murders going on around the area, the Chandra Levy case. And on top of all that, obviously, what were they dealing with? Lacey Peterson.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on.
Right, and remember how, like, with the Lacey Peterson case, how much, like, media circus there was around that and all that stuff. So, they had a lot on their hands. So, then in February of 2003, detectives get a confession to the murder of Dina from an inmate in prison in Arizona. But when they go question the inmate immediately tells detectives that he falsely confessed to Dina's murder so that he can have some time out of his prison cell.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
How did this guy even find out about this?
What a jerk, right?
But how did he even...
He just heard about it and, you know, it's just... It's like, okay, thanks, you know? Thanks for getting the family's hopes up and, you know what I mean? It's just, what a waste of time.
Yeah.
So then in October of 2007, a media request comes in to the police station for a request of a cold case that they wanted to feature. When detectives end up pulling Dina's file because of this request, they start to review it. Once again, it's brand new detectives and they're reviewing this cold case file. And they notice that Russell refused to take a polygraph. So... This new detective looking into Dina's case decides to follow up on Russell and see why he refused to take a polygraph test and to see if he can get him to talk now. So detectives head over to Russell's house to talk to him. And this time the detective is able to talk to him and form some sort of like bond with Russell to make Russell feel comfortable talking to him. Mm-hmm. And when he does, he asks Russell if he will go down to the police station and take a polygraph test. And to everyone's surprise, This time, Russell agrees.
He did?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
But when detectives start to question him, the more and more that Russell starts to refuse to take the polygraph. And his excuse is that he knows nothing about them. And if he misinterprets a question and the polygraph reads it as a lie, then they will arrest him, even though he had nothing to do with the disappearance. You know, just yeah, like how we were talking about. Yeah, it totally makes sense. So detectives continue to question him for about 8 hours. And after those 8 hours of questioning, finally, Russell leaves the station. He's like, you guys have nothing on me. You can't arrest me. I'm walking out. And he does. So then, on October 29th, 2007, detectives go to Russell's house again to try and talk to him. And when they do, they start to hypothetically ask questions about Dina.
Okay.
Yeah, so they start asking him, okay, hypothetically, do you think that she was buried within 100 miles of your home?
Why would he know that?
Again, Jose, hypothetically, they're trying to trick him. And just like you, he fell for it. And
I would
he was
not
like,
have fallen for that.
He was like, yes. So then Russell asked the police a hypothetical question. He says, if he's on parole and he wakes up one morning to a pound of dope on your kitchen table, what are you going to do? You're going to get rid of it, right? So that's his questions to detectives. And that's when detectives knew that he was talking about Dina. So Russell ends up telling detectives where to find Dina's body. And Russell tells detectives that he buried Dina's body in his parents' property in Tulum County. But he tells them that he didn't kill her. So Russell tells detectives that they had gone out for drinks, came back home, and they each went to their room and went to sleep. And that's when he woke up the next morning and he found her dead in the bathroom. So Russell tells detectives that he freaked out, buried her in a shallow grave, pouring diesel gasoline over the grave so that when the body started to decompose, it wouldn't smell and so that animals wouldn't go and dig her up. So that's what he's saying, okay? He's like, I don't know what happened, but I freaked out. I was on parole. I got scared. I had to get rid of the body, but I had nothing to do with it.
You never thought about just, you know, calling 911?
No, he's on parole. So he's scared.
And?
Because they're going to blame him. So.
No wonder he refused to take the polygraph.
Right. So later, Russell told detectives that they had. So now, let me back up. Now Russell is retelling his story. Okay.
Okay.
So Russell now is telling detectives that they had gone out drinking and that he had asked Dina to borrow $20 from her. And Russell said that when they got home, that she wouldn't leave him alone about paying her back the $20. So then Russell stated that they kept on going back and forth and she scratched Russell under his eye. And that kind of like a natural reaction, he punched her in the face and she died. One punch.
You're kidding.
One punch to the face, done. She died. She was out. But Russell said that he thought that she was still alive. So he thought, I punched her and I knocked her out. So he said that he threw a blanket over her and went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said the next morning that that's when he realized that Dina was actually dead. And Russell said that there was nothing that he could have done to help her. And he started to roll Dina's body up in a tarp. And he placed her body in the toolbox of his truck.
Oh, man.
He said that by the morning, her body was stiff. So he said that he couldn't get her body to fit. So he had to force her body into the toolbox with his body weight using his knee.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that more than likely, he probably broke her ribs while in the process of trying to make her fit in the toolbox. So when detectives found Dina's body, they weren't able to determine the cause of death for Dina since there were no bullet holes in Dina's bones and there didn't seem to be any other sign of trauma other than her bones that were broken, like her rib bones. And I think I read that it was like her chest, which I don't know for a fact that Russell would have known that. Mm-hmm. Like, he just assumed, like, yeah, I broke it. So he kind of confirmed, okay, he did force her into
the robot. Yeah, I mean, the story kind of lines up.
Mm-hmm. And then this is what got me, and I got me yelling at the TV so much.
Oh, no. How much time did he get?
So, on June 2011, Russell Jones got 11 years for voluntary manslaughter for the murder of Dina Riley McCluskey, which now means that Russell Jones is already out of prison.
11 years.
11 years, because they didn't have any evidence other than his confession. So that's the best that they could try him for. That's what they charged him for. And like I said, now Russell is a free man out there somewhere. And that angered me so much.
Shocking.
Right. I mean, it just angered me so much because it's like, you know, in the beginning of the story, like how I said, she felt like this guy was her friend, was her protector. And then in return, at the end, he, just like the show, he betrayed her. You know, he ends up killing her. And like I said, and then for him to just get 11 years is just, oh, that angered me so much. But
and over $20 in a nuisance? Well,
I mean, I think that nobody's really going to know if it really was over $20 or what was the reason. But I just felt like her story needed to be told. Again, it was all happening around the same time as all these other high-profile cases, that it's unfortunate that a case like hers didn't get the media attention that maybe it needed.
Yeah.
You know?
It really is unfortunate.
Yeah, because it's like, I don't know, maybe if they would have known that they had gone out to the bar, like maybe they would have gone to the bar and questioned the bartenders or, you know, somebody that was there that night.
Yeah, maybe it could have been solved a lot sooner.
Right. So, like I said, it just angered me, and I felt like her story needed to be told, you know, after obviously Russell got only 11 years and she's no longer around. If you want to look at pictures and want more information on the cases we cover, you can head over to truecrimeweeklypodcast.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at @podcasttruecrimeweekly. And I would truly love it and appreciate it if you would leave a 5-star review and subscribe onto Apple Podcasts. The only way that people find out about us is through subscribers and reviews. Thanks for listening.